I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got no way to go. Got to catch my sugar, my plantain sugar, my plantain sugar, my plantain sugar. Ah, plantain,
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, the Arsenal edition. This is your host, Dean, and I am here with my co-host, not coach. Thank God, I'm tired of that motherfucker. I got Gabby with me. How you doing, Gabby?
I'm good, I'm good.
And we have Mitch, who ran straight from work, still in his suit and tie, his briefcases in his hand with his headphones on his head. Legendary effort. Appreciate you, Mitch. Welcome, Mitch. How are you?
For the record, I don't wear a suit to work. It's a very, this is a normal jacket. This isn't insane.
Hey, let me start doing suit and a mustache? God forbid.
Let me start doing the YouTube shit. People will see through your lies, Mitch. You know, because I've never told a lie on this pod. That's a fact. In any event, we're here to talk about Arsenal at Bramall Lane away to Sheffield United. It ended 6-0, and it could have been so much better, or I guess worse if you're a Sheffield fan. But then again, they all went home like before the 25th minute, so I don't really know what they think or what they feel. But let's just get into it. Gabby, you saw the lineup. What'd you think? The Jorginho protocol is back on. It feels like it's our new theme.
You know what? The only thing I was surprised by in the lineup is I thought that we were going to go back to the Trossard thing, Trossard as a false nine, and I was like, you know what? I'm okay with this. Don't change the lineup. Leave it alone. You know, we're winning and we don't need to do anything special against Sheffield. So
this is fair. Mitch, I had a slight inkling that we might see Eddie based on his performance against them at the Emirates and the fact that he hadn't played in so long that I'm like, hey, rest some people, give Eddie some minutes.
He's I was going to say, be for real. You know, you were not going to see no Eddie and Kedia.
Mitch, is that how you were thinking? We're not going to see Eddie ever again?
Yeah, I kind of think probably. I kind of think that he was playing so much at the beginning of the season, almost putting him in the shop window. No one was financially liquid enough to make anything happen in January. So we're kind of at a point now, especially with Jesus is now back. He played today. And I think Havertz is our nine foreseeably going forward. Where we probably won't see Eddie, bar injuries. And like, as big of a fan of Eddie as I am, I'm kind of okay with that. I'm going to be completely honest. I love the player. I think he's great. But I think he's our third option at center forward right now. And has been for a bit.
He might be our fourth.
Really, when you think about it.
Yeah.
Habits, Jesus,
Trossard,
then him.
Yeah.
I'm so glad Black History Month is over. That would have hurt to say in February, but it's true. It's so damn true. So let's get to it. Fast opening in this one. I'd barely turned the TV on when I saw that the ball was like caroming off the bar because Saka did something. I still haven't watched it back. Then Martinelli almost put it in. Someone cleared it off the line. At that point, Gabby, what were you thinking was going to happen today?
I was like, what, chaos? Like, how did we not score? The way that it hit, I thought for sure it was going into the rooftop. Like when Saka hit the bar, I was like, oh, that's a goal. And then he hit the bar and I was like, oh, that's not a goal. And we didn't follow it up either. Like, all right, that's fine. I was like, if we're on their necks from the first minute, like this might get ugly. This might get ugly real fast.
Mitch, did you have any concerns that that we were maybe, because you know when the first good chance in a game kind of goes missing, do you ever have, I mean, I had a slight, the very slightest inkling that, you know what, I hope it's not one of those days.
Not in this game, because this was a game going into it where, you know, Arsenal fans are going to run their negative gimmicks all the time, but this is a game where it was not a question of, are we going to lose this game? It was a question of, am I going to be mad because we didn't score enough goals? And the answer is yes. I am mad that we didn't score enough goals.
That's fucked up, Mitch.
You wanted 10.
Yes.
I ain't gonna lie to you. I did want 10. I wanted 10.
Here's the thing. We scored 6 goals today. which is a fantastic amount of goals, and we're on the road for this. Like, this wasn't the Emirates. I have never seen a Premier League team look as pitiful as Sheffield United did in this game. We scored 5 in the first half, and, you know, rightfully so, took our foot off the gas. But, like, I'm kind of frustrated, and, like, this isn't a bit. I'm genuinely kind of frustrated we didn't score more, because with how close the title race is going to be, goal difference is going to be vital. And right now, with us smashing the shit out of teams, that's very helpful. Like, we're first in goal difference right now.
I will
but
say,
like, put up 10. Just, like, this team sucks ass. Just score 10 goals. It's that easy. They are barely a Premier League team. It's pitiful.
It is. Yeah. I was going to say that them, I looked at the goal differential for Sheffield, and I was like, they have negative 50 goal differential. That's absurd. Like, they're definitely going to, I mean, we knew they were going down when they came up, but, like, I thought they would put up more of a fight than this. Like, this, they're definitely going down. Like, they'll be relegated like 2 weeks from now. Like, yeah, mathematically.
They are deliciously terrible. Like, I'm trying to think of historically, like, I remember Derby County being really bad one time they came up. I remember Blackpool being really shit at one point, but this is different. Them and Burnley this season have been
horrible.
I will say that no one's topping that Derby County season. I think they had like 9 points or something.
Nobody's topping
like
that.
They only had 9 points. I remember living through that, and they were bad. But I don't remember them being as pathetic as Sheffield United.
One game.
I know. They didn't win a lot, but they also put up more of a fight in most of their games. And the Prem just wasn't that good. The Prem wasn't as good as it is now. Like, the top teams, there wasn't that much of a gap between the bottom teams and the top teams. So Derby, despite their points total, did not look that bad that season. It was still very banterous, but it didn't look as horrible as Sheffield United looks this season. Because I wanted to run the whole, like, we got to be humble narrative too before the game, but I knew in the back of my mind, I was like, if we don't score 5, we fucked up. That's how I felt about it.
Yeah, it was absurd. It was absurd.
Let's get to the goals.
I mean, 6.
Yeah, 6. Yeah, it still feels underwhelming. Mitch is right. It does.
I was looking at Jesus.
Yeah,
he
just came back from injury, so we'll give him a pass today, but not against Brentford in a few days. First goal, Rice crossed it. Odegaard finished it. I guess it's as good a point as any to start on Odegaard. Mitch, he's one of the few white men that does not look like you. What did you make of his performance today? Apparently his family was in the building, so that's why he got the 90 minutes, I imagine, because he's someone that we should rest more often, I feel like, given how much he presses. He
got the 90 minutes.
Yeah. What'd you make of him today?
So am I just like, do I just look like every white guy, or am I just like a base setting?
Here's the thing. So black people, yes. So white people, yes. I don't know. Maybe when Elliot comes back to the pod, we'll ask him.
Okay, great. I mean, great performance from Odegaard, obviously. I don't think there's a lot of players that we can point to and be like, yeah, they were bad today, until maybe we get to the subs. He was fantastic. Great goal. A classic Odegaard finish. He's just been on one since the turn of the new year, which has coincided with Arsenal being on one, because when Odegaard is ticking, this team is ticking. And there's not much you could say than that, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, he just is very much an Arteta player. Like, he's just very much an Arteta player. I looked up, like, at the screen, and we had already scored, like, 5 or 6 by that point, and I was, like, seeing Odegaard still pressuring, like, players, like, sprinting across, and I was like, relax. Like, we need you fit for the rest of the season. Like, he's just running around doing whatever, and I'm like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, you can tell why he's the captain. He just – it's very fitting for him to start off the goal scoring today. It was just very good.
Yeah. Would we count his goal as we added to the whole catalog of cutback goals? I feel like it was a little too close to the net to be a cutback goal.
I'll allow it. I'll allow it for sure.
All right. Let's get to the next goal. In the 13th minute, Bukayo cooked Trusty and crossed it, and it went in as an own goal by Jaden Bogle. You like the U.S. men's national team, Mitch. What do you make of this guy? Does he even play for you guys? Like, what's the deal with that?
Not.
He has played for the Nationals. He missed a couple caps.
Yeah, you guys, but not really.
As a former Colorado Rapid and former Arsenal player, I like Austin Trusty. And I do think that he is a good player. However, I think it's very hard for him to look good when he's on this kind of team. Also, it's hard to put a Saka cooking on him. That happens to everyone. Like, there's a shorter list of defenders that haven't been cooked by Saka than a list that haven't. A list that has. So, I'm not exactly putting it on him and being like, yeah, you're terrible because one of the best players in the league cooked him. I think he's just on a terrible team. And, like, last season in the championship, he was Birmingham City's player of the season. He was phenomenal. He's now gone to the worst Premier League team and, you know, naturally isn't great. And because no one is on that team.
Well, since we're being all positive about that loser and shit, I will say he was better today than he was at the Emirates when Eddie cooked
that. Definitely was.
So I suppose that's progress. So that's good for Greg Berhalter or whatever. That was the 15th minute. Odegaard switched the ball to the left side. Martinelli carried it a bit, exchanged passes with Gabby's best friend, Kivior, and swept the ball in. I guess you know that we're coming to you, Gabby. So
yeah,
what would
you say
about that confidence and his work? And does he need dentures?
What? No, why would you say that?
Hey, listen.
There's a little bit of a dig in there.
I was in the group chat minding my business, and I heard people saying that he has a – man, these are terrible people I hang out with, but they said he has a – they said, and I quote, these are not my words, people.
Mm-hmm.
Every time he opens his mouth, he looks like a refugee. To which someone responded, come on, man, what the fuck is wrong with you? To which I responded, I'm putting this on the pod.
Terrible. But you know what? Birds of a feather flock together, okay? I'll not let you get away with this. Leave my boy alone. Probably Gabby's probably going to be like, oh, yeah, you know, you should probably fix your teeth soon, you know? Like, because he's the... That's your guy.
Yeah,
but
the consultants on the team.
Yeah, you guys have plenty of consultants on the team for that. But that... That no-look assist, yeah. I was like, yeah, he knew where you were. I love that for me. Also, it just, like, before I get to the actual goal, that little moment of terror I had when, like, Raya had the ball and we almost lost the ball and then he kicked it all the way out and then we started the move, I was like, oh, okay, I can be calm. Like, that. For that almost half a second bit of fear for the whole game, that's the only time I had even an inkling. But Kibior was booking it to make that overlap. I literally watched the replay back and I was like, oh yeah, he was like way behind Martinelli. Like he was booking it to get there. And when he got there, he got what he deserved. He got that assist. And Martinelli, I'm glad he's back on the score sheet. That's it. Like I need his confidence high. And it seems to be coming back after, you know, I knew we said this about everybody, but after Dubai, yeah, he looks like the player that I feel like he's always been, but not at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, that's still a quick Dubai detour. What exactly did these motherfuckers do in Dubai, Mitch?
Kip Dockers?
Yeah, like you got money. Like, who's been to Dubai on this podcast? I haven't been to Dubai.
You think I've been to Dubai?
No. I don't know. Your daddy does what I do. You might have been to Dubai, motherfucker. Goddamn, shit.
That's rich blood right there.
This can't be all down to Salt Bay. This is crazy, man. Like I'm just very pleased. And we have a bunch of time off, I think, after the Brentford, or is it the Porto game before we play City? There's like an international break in there.
Yeah, we play Brentford, Porto, and then an international break.
Yeah, it's like almost a month. Almost.
We should go to Dubai again.
Yeah, we should go back, right?
I'm with it.
real quick on Kivior. I didn't really get to talk about the lineup. I kind of think that this is just the lineup going forward. Until further notice, I see no reason to change anything. Jorginho, Kivior, and Havertz at striker all are like, I think have played very, very well through this whole period of Arsenal being very, very good, where there's no reason unless form dips or injuries happen for Zinchenko or Jesus to like immediately be starting again once they're like fully fit. Like Kivior has been so good as a left back, and then pairing him with Jorginho in that double pivot where we aren't needing someone to invert from left back has been so, so effective. Havertz has been so good, which we'll get to later because he scored. But I think that for a while, Kivior has been playing there and it's been like, yeah, he's been really good, but he's a depth player. He's playing there because Zinchenko and Tomiyasu aren't fit. He's doing a job, but he's been really good for someone that's like not a left back, has never played left back before he was an Arsenal player, and he is doing a phenomenal job.
I think he got some minutes there at Spezia
earlier
in his career, and he's played as a DM as well and at some other spots in his career, but for the most part he's a center back. And apparently there's much more to his game that we're not seeing at the moment, which is very exciting to think about.
Listen, if you've ever seen him play for Poland, which I have, his passing range is crazy. I can't wait to see that. Like, yeah. I mean, he's been really good since he came in, but like I saw a tweet today that was like, I think all the players who have been starting, who are not already starting, those are their places to lose. Georgie, Kivior, Kai, and I don't disagree.
Yeah, so Coach got to me on this because I'm thinking to myself, if I'm picking the lineup for Porto, we're skipping over Brentford with this, no disrespect to them, but if I'm picking the lineup for for Porto in another week from now or 2 weeks from now, whenever the hell it is, if Gabi Jesus is all the way fit, I think he kind of has to play because we essentially saw this.
That's a big if.
Without
That's a big if.
Well, I mean, he made it through this game, but we'll get to that in a little bit. He made it through this game, so there's a chance that he'll be healthy for that. I think if he's healthy, he should probably play. I just think he brings a level of chaos to proceedings that is really good against a team that's going to sit in a deep block or a mid block against us like they did in the first leg. And we kind of missed him, I felt like, in that game, you know. So, but outside of that, I do agree that generally, I mean, it's basic football knowledge, I suppose. Don't change a winning team. If they're playing well, just keep them playing. Let those connections keep forming, keep morphing and whatnot. Gabby briefly mentioned Raya when he played that pass that sort of led to the broken transition moment that led to the third goal, because there are so many fucking goals, I can't keep them straight. But there was a point in the first half. It was an offside chance. I think it was Gustavo Hammer for Sheffield United broke through our lines. He was offside. But it was a one-on-one with Raya, and he stoned him on that. And he probably
that was a good save. I know he's outside, but that was a great save.
I was very impressed by that. Mitch, you're the goalkeeper. What'd you make of it?
I mean, exactly what you're supposed to do on a 1v1. And like time and time again, Raya is proving that he is a very good goalkeeper. I think people are always gonna have like a little anytime you steal it, you take a spot of a fan favorite, it's always going to be a little bit tougher for you to like get into the good graces of the fans. And so like you saw against Porto when he didn't save that one goal, which by the way, I don't think is his fault. I don't think he was off his line by any means. And I think it was a really good shot. But you see people immediately going after him. It's taking a while, but he's been so, so good this season. Like, he's been phenomenal.
He has the highest number of clean sheets in the league now.
I don't think that's a goalkeeper stat.
Start the season.
My hill that I will die on is that's not a goalkeeper stat. Like, you defended a team. And, like the guy who won the Golden Glove in the Premier League last season, he is unemployed right now. That shows how much of a goalkeeper stat it is.
Well,
it does not matter.
That's because he wants a certain kind of job. Come on, Mitch.
Yeah.
No,
Mr. Davi deserves to pick his own job.
But it's what I'm saying. Like it's just like that's not a thing where like getting the Golden Glove based on how many clean sheets you got is kind of disrespectful to your defense for one, and B, it's just like a really weird way to give out an award. I would way rather it be like a goalkeeper of the year kind of an award where it's like this has been the best goalkeeper in the year. Like that's how MLS does it, and I think it's a better system than you had the most clean sheets. A counting stat that doesn't really work in the same way. Okay. All right.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure Raya has the highest save percentage. I don't know if it's this year, like 2024. I think it is, though.
It is.
That's a better stat. Give the Golden Glove based on that stat.
Fair enough. But yeah, you know, I mean, goalkeeping is such a tricky thing to evaluate overall. I think those of us that haven't really done it at a high level are, you know, obviously we're going to express opinions because that's what we do as fans, but we don't know what the fuck we're talking about. We really don't. I still think back to that Mudryk fluke goal against Chelsea And people had so much to say about it. I was like, bro, the motherfucker kicked the ball wrong and it went in. Shit happens. Like, there's nothing to analyze here, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, you're on an island as a goalkeeper, so it is what it is.
It is what it is. Goal number four. God, I'm already out of breath. So many goddamn goals. High press. Martinelli robbed Ahmed Hozic. That's a player I kind of used to like until this season. I don't know if it's fair to judge him in this Sheffield United team. He's a really good center back, or at least he was prior to Sheffield United, but he didn't look very good today.
I'm not going to pretend like I know anybody from Sheffield other than Trusty. So,
but Martinelli basically robbed him, tried to carry it. He yanks Martinelli. He should have gotten booked for that, by the way. But
I was thinking the same thing. The way, when you watch the replay, the way he yanked him down,
it was violent. It was very rude. But Kai Havertz did not wait for the ref to do anything. He just picked up the ball. The ref played a good advantage. He drove in. He probably could have made two different passes there, but he thought to himself, you know what? I'm Kai Havertz. I'm the shit. I'm going to score a goal. And he scored a great goal. It was probably my favorite of the bunch, I would say.
Agreed.
The next one is my favorite.
But let's
check my Declan's, but
which one's the next one? Yeah.
I'm getting a mix up. I'm talking about Ben White.
We're all going through this right now. But Gabby, what'd you make of your boy driving with such confidence? And I mean, he looked like a pure nine in that moment.
Yeah, I was gonna say that was a clinical finish. That was just a pure number nine finish. Like the thing that we're asking him to do most of the time, which he like is not doing a lot, but that was just a really good goal. Also, that I really appreciate the ref not blowing the whistle, because that would have pissed me off. Like, just allow play, and then we went out and scored. And I said, "Yeah, good. That's what I wanted." He has been, well, I'll say he was my man of the match this game. If Martin Odegaard would have been second for me, because it was so close. But like, yeah, I think Kai just pips it because he has a goal and assist. And I just think that was a really good goal. Like, that's what I want Jesus to do. If he's going to be a starting striker, but he's not. So listen, King Kai, I love that for you.
Like, Mitch, is it time for us to reach a conclusion on Kai? Like, or do we still, I mean, obviously we want more. We're always going to want more from all our players, but have we seen enough to be like, you know what? This was a successful transfer.
Yeah, 100%. I think at this point, I am marking down Kai Havertz as he has been very successful. The amount of times that he has contributed to games is more than enough. Like we've talked about in this pod, if he is here to help us beat City and Liverpool, then he was a successful signing. He's done that and then some. He scored the winner against Brentford. He scored a bunch of goals. He's one goal off of his highest tally for Chelsea already. And he's just been in outstanding form. And I think it's been a slow burn to get there, but you mentioned how we got this goal and it was through the press. And I think that Kai is the reason that our press has been able to go up another level this season. Because our press is, it's indescribable.
It's
unreal. Like I wasn't able to talk about the Newcastle game. I wasn't on the pod, but it was fucking crazy in that game. Like, I don't know how we were suffocating a team that is that good on the attack so effectively. We were able, like, just triggered Bruno Guimaraes so effectively. Granted, not supposed to talk about the Newcastle game. That was last week. But the press is just so, so good. It allows us to just be able to camp in their half. And when you're able to press that high, you just don't get transitioned. That was our issue last season. We were getting transition. Now we have Declan Rice to stop transitions. Now we're pressing so high, so you can't even get out of your own half. And Kai's been such a huge part of that. He's such an effective pressing trigger. He's such so smart. He is one of the most intelligent players I've ever seen. Sometimes the ball doesn't stick to his foot, for sure. And that's the thing that's going to get clipped on Twitter. That's the thing that people are going to see. But when you really watch Kai Havertz, like, he is one of the most intelligent players. He is the smartest player on the field. I think that's a very easy thing to say.
I was gonna say next to Martin Odegaard and Bukayo Saka, that might be a little bit,
but then you talk about the amount of players that we have are intelligent, and that's what makes our press so good, and that's what makes us so good. And how we can just suffocate teams. That teams in 2024 haven't even gotten one XG against us in a game. They're averaging like 0.6 or something like that, because we're just stopping them in their tracks. There's nothing anyone can do against Arsenal right now because we are just playing at a different level than every single team we've come up against.
Well said, I was going to say, like, you said that better than I could possibly have imagined, because I don't know. I don't have the words to say how good Kai has been this season for me personally. And I'm glad that people are seeing it. You don't have to like squint to see it. I always saw it. Granted, at the beginning of the season, he definitely needed to shed that Chelsea skin. He was not playing as good as he should have. But he's very intelligent, and he drifts everywhere. Like, he's everywhere at all times for some reason. And it's refreshing. It's refreshing. He does all the things that I want him to do. And I know that a lot of people look at GA and like, well, he needs more GA. But like, I mean, he's hitting jack of numbers from last season. So like, I don't know what to tell you guys. Just is what it is.
Well, final bit on the omniscient Kai Havertz. What target would you set for him from now? There are 11 games left in the Premier League. Maybe more games if we do well in the Champions League, which, knock on wood, I hope we do. What are you expecting from him through the end of the season? How many more goals can we reasonably expect from him?
I think he's at 10 GA right now. Okay. I think successful and I think realistic is anywhere from like 15 to 17.
Okay.
Gabby? With that.
Yeah, I was going to say I expect 4 to 5 more.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That seems fair. That seems fair. That was a fifth goal before halftime. God, I'm so tired. Declan Rice converted from a Saka cross, but really the true moment in that goal was sort of the half turn that Saka took. Because Sheffield United had made a sub at that point. They brought on a different fullback, Osborne, and they switched to, was it 4 or 5 at the back at that point? And yeah. Saka did the half turn, and I've been watching football for a very long time. I've been playing it for a very long time, and I can't recall anyone taking the ball on the half turn on the wrong foot. Because that's what happened there. Like, usually a player touches the ball in that situation with their right foot before they turn back onto their stronger foot if they need to do that. Saka took it on his left foot, which was actually closer to the defender, and he couldn't do a thing about it. I've never seen that before. Mitch,
you seen there's an Art DeRoche article in The Athletic a couple years ago where he was talking about Saka, Emile Smith-Rowe, Phil Foden. A lot of these like young English players were taught to receive the ball with their back foot in stride. And how efficient that can be and how much of that like can influence someone like Saka and Foden and Smith Rowe's game. And you see it a lot. Once you've like read that article and you notice what it can do, you see it a lot. Saka does it a shit ton. And so the way that he receives the ball is so effective, and he's such a smart player that he's able to beat players with just how he receives the ball. And it's very, very fun to watch. Also, with Sheffield United sub, I have never seen a sub in the 15th minute that wasn't injury related. That was fucking crazy.
I felt bad for that guy.
It happens. When the coach realizes that his tactical approach is shit, you know, you kind of got to make a change instead of just watching them flounder.
If you're Chris Wilder, five-nil at the half, what the fuck do you say to your team?
I was thinking the same thing at halftime. I was like, what did they say at halftime? Like, keep chugging along? Like,
you know what? So from experience, I think the conversation generally goes like, hey, fellas, I'm going to be at the bar. Y'all can meet me there in 45 minutes. I'm just here in spirit, but physically I'm drinking at the bar. Y'all come meet me there. But yeah, it was a bad look. But yeah, like Rice, though, I love that Rice is almost like he's almost like an algorithm of a player. I feel like every week I see him improve on something from the last week, because in the game against Newcastle, he had a similar opportunity from a similar position and he hit it right at Karius. This time he plays across the goalkeeper and into the net, which I didn't expect. And come to find out, he has now matched with 10 goals and assists combined this season for Arsenal. He has now matched his combined total from the prior two seasons with West Ham.
Love that for him. I mean, he did say that he wanted to score more when he got to Arsenal. That's what he said.
He did say that, and he's doing it. I just didn't expect it to happen. I don't know. It almost feels as if it's crazy because we're essentially in crunch time of the season, but it almost feels like we just kind of found ourselves as a team, if that makes sense.
We did.
Everything still feels kind of new to me. Mitch?
This is exactly what we want. Like, we were talking about this at the beginning of the season when we started a little bit slower. We wanted to drop points then, so we don't do it now. This team, we've gone through a lot of trial and error earlier in the season. We dropped points that we didn't want to. We had a bad run of form in December, but now this team knows exactly what they are and can be, and they're refreshed and ready to do that. And it's exactly what you need to be if you want to win a title. You know, it's very, very close. We've gone on this crazy run of form, and we're still in third. And I get that is a frustrating thing for a lot of Arsenal fans. But if you look ahead, Man City and Liverpool play each other next week. There's a very good chance that if we take care of our business, we're top of the table at the end of next week. So all we can do is win our games. And so if they draw, we're top of the table.
If they draw and we win.
I was gonna say, but if we beat Brentford, then we're top of the table for the first time since December. And that puts pressure on them even before their game, that being Liverpool and Man City. So, and I think we'd want a draw in that game, right?
I think I want either a draw or a City win, because City we can do something about. Like, we play them.
That's true. We do play them, but I would prefer a draw.
It's still controlling our own destiny if City win that game. Obviously, draw is the best case scenario. But if one of the teams is going to win, I would rather it be City, because we go to the Etihad and we can take points from them again. If Liverpool win, they can devil magic their way the rest of the season, and we can't do anything about it because we don't play them. We don't have any direct impact on what they are doing with their devil magic, because it is devil magic. I need to make it very clear that it is devil magic, and I don't know what devil magic, but it's devil magic.
How many times has you said devil magic in the last 1 minute?
Like, listen, man, they've been devil magicking for a while, and City have won the last, they've won 4 of the last 5, and Liverpool got 1 based on devil magic. So if given the choice, if I have to choose a team to win that game, then I'd much rather Liverpool win it. I feel like they're more likely to pull some Christian bullshit, you know, like when they went to Crystal Palace all those years ago and lost, when they sort of just wrapped the league off. I feel like all that emotion at some point might just backfire. Just might backfire. Like, but City, they do this. So whatever anyone can take off them, that's what I need. Like, I still like Liverpool at top of the table. They've been playing well, but a lot of their victories, more so than City, who have not really hit top form either this season, just seem a little more chaotic. Like with City, it's very systematic. Like, United led them for 48 minutes yesterday, and it was never in doubt. None of us ever thought that United were going to get anything out of that game. Liverpool, for a brief moment there, we all thought, oh, Forest are about to take points off these motherfuckers.
Forest should have put points off those motherfuckers.
Get your devil magic kicked in, and there you have it. You know, so okay. Halftime. At half, Fabio Vieira came on for the first time since early December. The new father with the newly repaired groin is back. I mean, he had some moments. We might as well just talk about him while we're here. I'm not gonna criticize his performance at all, saying that it was bad or anything, but I also don't remember much. There was a pass where I thought he should have shot, but short of that.
Well, if you don't remember much, I know we have things to say. So
it's a low bar, but he was the best of the subs.
Yes.
Like 100%, he was the best one that came on. He had the most time to do something, but he was the best of the subs that came on. And he had a couple good chances that I think he took an extra touch here or there. But, you know, it's his first game in a while. It's good to see him back out there. I think people will probably be frustrated that it was him and not Emile Smith Rowe, but I also think that is a little bit of a Ramsdale Raya thing, where people just like Smith Rowe more. I'm also frustrated Smith Rowe didn't play, for the record, before people start calling me a Smith Rowe hater again. For the record, I'm also disappointed about that, but I did think Fabio was the best of the subs.
Yeah, we'll talk more about Smith Rowe and the rest of the Hillanders later, but I just... It's a very simple thing to me. Like, when a player that I want to see isn't playing and they're healthy, I just assume that the person who gets to watch them in training every day thinks someone is training better than him. That's really all it boils down to. It's not about who the manager likes or agendas. It's just who is more likely to help us win this game. That's all it is. And, you know, also we've converted Smith Rowe to a central midfielder at this point. He hasn't appeared on the wing at all since he came back from his lung injury. So, and Fabio Vieira, he's been more of a right winger / left 8 / right 8. He's a little more versatile in his appearances. So it just made sense that if Saka was going to go off, I would have expected Reece Nelson to come on. Yeah. But we know what we can get out of him. Apparently, it's not much according to Arteta. Fabio Vieira, on the other hand, he still hasn't fully shown it. He hasn't had the opportunity to really give us that run of form in his Arsenal career, but he's clearly a goal and assist machine once he really clocks in with his teammates. So we're still waiting for that. But Gabby, what did you make of him?
That's what I was going to say. I mean, one last thing on Emile. I mean, honestly, it's just the difference between those two is just one is an Arteta signing and one is not. You know, that's it. I mean, it just... Fabio's final ball is so absurd sometimes. Like, he should have 100% should have had an assist for that Jesus chance. He just, like... Was it Jesus or Martinelli?
I actually
can't remember.
Yeah.
But he... It just... They just didn't... They couldn't... The volley just didn't come off the way it should have. But that movement, and like, I saw a lot of people on my timeline saying, like, I didn't even know Fabio had afterburners like that. Like, he was sprinting up. He needed that groin surgery for sure. But yeah, I was excited to see him. I've never sold my stocks on Fabio. I think he's a very good player. Like I said, his final ball is crazy. The efficiency in which he has trying to get that ball into the box to the right player, the weight of pass, he just is very good. And like, I didn't expect that to come off today because it's his first game in
forever.
I didn't even know how long, months. But yeah, he was definitely the best of the subs for sure.
Yeah, very well said. I'm just hoping that this is the beginning of a narrative arc that ends with him scoring or assisting a hat trick against Porto in a couple weeks here, like, and him apologizing the whole time. That's his club, really. But hey, man, you got to do what you got to do, you know. So they didn't take it easy on you when you're on the bench in Porto, my friend. Shortly thereafter, we had goal number 6. All I remember from that one is that Kai Havertz pulled a pass down, cut inside a defender, teed it up for Ben White, and who knew that he had a left foot? Mitch, were you aware of this?
No, what the fuck? He, like, hit the shit out of the ball with his weak foot and tore the net. What the fuck was that?
Yeah, I was very pleasantly surprised and pleased.
Gabby, he was not going to waste that assist from his best buddy, okay? Yeah. He was not going to waste that assist.
Are they, is this like an online relationship type thing?
Yeah, that they started fucking in Dubai. That's why they're both.
Like, I was talking about people sharing wives and shit.
I've been spreading the agenda on my timeline.
we've long had a theory on this podcast that we haven't stated explicitly, but we believe all the best teams have members of those teams that are responsible for certain kinds of behavior that I will not vocalize on the spot still.
Okay, but great. So we're all on the same page. That's what they were doing in Dubai. That's why we're doing really well.
Absolutely. Like, I can't imagine that you'd go to Dubai if you weren't planning to have an orgy, but that's just me. I don't know. Like I don't have the money like that, but once the time comes, I imagine that's what I'll be doing in Dubai. Like, what am I going to go shopping?
You started sharing wives and stuff like that. They started banging. So
Pretty much, wasn't lying in that press conference.
Like, rumor has it that David De Gea was responsible for that task at Manchester United, and you know, this is why they're not succeeding at anything anymore, because their guy is gone. You know, like, they don't have an organizer anymore. You know, that's, you know. So in any event, let's just move on. Ben, he's such a. I remember when we were bargaining to get him from Brighton, and people were like, 15 million. And I don't know that I think that price was fair, in quotes. I'm doing the air quotes thing, people. But I've never really doubted the validity of the purchase. He's a fantastic footballer. Like,
yeah, I agree.
Even though this was a bit of a surprise, I don't even know that it's really a surprise, because I feel like he's capable of everything except elite 1v1 defending.
Yeah.
I feel like at this point, because I feel like Gabriel's graduated from this. He's no longer the most underrated player at Arsenal, because I feel like he's like really started to get his flowers this season. Ben has firmly taken that role, because he's been someone that I don't think gets enough praise for what he does and the consistency he brings to the team and what he's been doing for 3 years for Arsenal. Like, he has rarely put a foot wrong for 3 years. He's signing a new contract. It's so deserved. People talk about him as someone that they see being replaced from the lineup. I don't think that, like, just in the fact that in the small glimpses we saw Timber, we saw him playing left back, is a great representation of, Ben's not going to be dropped anytime soon. He is such a valuable member of this team and is very, very underrated and is so, so good.
I rate Ben from here till forever, but I disagree on that.
I was gonna say I disagree on that. I think Timber's gonna be on the right a lot more than you think, but we'll see.
We'll see. We'll have to see. But I and you know, this is good for depth. You know, guys get rotated, less minutes in everyone's legs and whatnot. You know, there's no drop off if you have to sit somebody. It's all great. But I think ultimately, if Timber becomes a player we think or that we thought we were getting, I see Ben kind of moving to more of a backup role. If you want to call it a backup in this squad game of, you know, nowadays where you have five subs and all that, you know, but I think ultimately he's probably destined for a central defensive role where we don't have to spend like, because I know there are a lot of people in love with like a purchase, like say like Lenny Yoro or Usman Diomande. I feel like we just end up moving Ben there as a backup and we don't have to worry about it. Ooh, poor Mitch.
I was about to say it.
Way to cover that up, buddy. Appreciate you.
Well, I muted so that we didn't have to talk about me sneezing, but then you guys talked about it.
It was such a hard, like, sneeze.
It was a hard sneeze, but it was silent, which was very impressive. Let's just do the subs now. Cedric came on for Ben White, who we just talked about. Mitch, I feel like you always have strong thoughts on Cedric. Do you want to get those out now so we can move on in peace?
I like that we have Cedric as like a I like we've been putting him on as like an insult to injury, like really rubbing salt in the, like, you guys are doing so bad that we're bringing this fucking bum onto the field. How does that feel? Cedric gets to play now. Look at that.
Gabby, do you hate Cedric more or less than Mitch does?
I don't hate him. I think he's a fun character. I just think he's bad.
I don't hate Cedric. I probably less because I don't hate Cedric, but he was the worst of the subs. I will say that. He looked not great. Like, I mean, he doesn't play that often, and we already know he's not quality. So,
Martinelli.
You're getting sold in the summer.
Martinelli came off for a returning Jesus. It didn't look good when he went off, but the coach says that he just got a cut from that challenge with Ahmed Hozic. So I'm not too worried about him. I wasn't worried at the time either, even though it looked a little dramatic.
Me either.
What do we make of Jesus' performance? I thought he had some opportunities to maybe come back with a bang, but he did a little too much sambaing, if you will, which he's prone to do.
Jesus is in his head. You can tell he's in his head. He's thinking about like how he used to be so important and integral to our team. And he is still very important, but you can see he's losing grip on like that starting place. And he's thinking about it. He's not scoring as much as he's out in the media saying, you know, I don't score, you know, like other people or whatever he said when he was with Brazil. And I'm just like, stop thinking so hard and just play, like, not hinky dinky all the time. Like, just put your laces through the ball.
Yeah, like, I don't think he has a choice in the matter, because when you look at his face, like, he always looks like he's distressed about some shit anyways, with those fucking big ass eyebrows pointing the wrong direction, you know, looking like Mighty Mouse and shit. Yeah, he always looks so worried about nothing, you know, so maybe he's just that kind of guy. Mitch, anything on Gabby Jesus before we move on?
Yeah, it took like 7 extra touches, but, you know, first game back, I'm not worried about him. I do think, with your point earlier about him potentially starting versus Porto if he's healthy, he is so good in the Champions League, so I do see validity to that. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But if we get the lineup in a week from now when we play Porto and it's him starting, I'm not gonna like lose my shit or anything. All right, cool. Jesus is starting. Great. He's a good player. Like,
I do. But now that we've revisited the topic, I'm like, what are the knock-on effects of that? Because if Jesus plays, I still won't have it on the field.
And then Jorginho
on the field. So I don't know. Maybe he plays on the wing.
I was thinking. I said either you put him on the wing or you sit him on the bench and bring him on later, because I also just don't want him. He's not going to play 90 minutes, but I also just don't want him playing too long, because that knee, the way that they have to like keep draining his knee is not good.
You know, starting him on the left, bringing Martinelli on against tired legs, you know.
Listen, you're thinking what I'm
saying.
I'm liking the way you think, Mitch. Good shit, man. Okay, Jorginho went off for number 5. We haven't seen that motherfucker in a very, very long time. He had a thigh injury or whatever the fuck his problem was. Now he's back. All I would like to say is that people, if he's healthy, the manager is going to use him. I don't know what the context will be. Maybe he'll be Jorginho's backup. Maybe he'll start ahead of him. But the manager does like the player. It was his first big purchase. He spent 50 million quid on that motherfucker. So he's going to play despite everything. my request to those of you listening to this is, can we chill with the Civil War shit? Like, we all have our stance in this matter. Some people like him, some people don't, for the various reasons. On this pod, we don't even say his name anymore, so you know where we stand with it. But that's all I have to say about it. Gabby, did you want to add anything to that?
No, I just, like, the only thing I have to say is he was very, I mean, just like Jay-Z's, he was rusty. He was just very rusty. He was never going to come back in and look like the, you know, the best player on the pitch. I don't know what people were thinking, but I was like, the first moment he gave the ball away, I was like, please don't start. Like, just, I need a clean sheet for the FPL. Like, I'm trying to don't start the nonsense. It's good for him to get some reps under his legs. I personally think he'll be gone in the summer because they tried to sell him last summer. So it's kind of just is what it is. We want the squad to stay fit for the rest of the season because we're in crunch time and we have not a lot of games left, but like a good few games left, and I don't want to see any more injuries. So
yeah. Mitch, any virtual signaling, anything you want to do, you know, like you're trying to holler at these girls or anything like that, huh? Yeah,
nothing I can say that won't be clouded by off the field thoughts about Thomas Partey. So,
and that's very fair, very fair. But our stance has been clear for a very, very long time, for going on 2 seasons now, because this shit has been going on for a long fucking time,
way too fucking long.
And now wait till he's not our problem anymore. That's where we'll leave that. Trossard came on for Rice, I believe. Do I have that correct? Yes. I just heard that he was on and Rice was off.
I forgot he came on.
Yeah, I don't remember him doing much.
Forgettable performance, honestly. I mean, he only had a few minutes, but still.
He came on in like the 80th minute. Like, it's whatever.
Well, that's the time at which I thought that we'd see maybe the Haaland boys kind of come in and, you know, spare some minutes. But we didn't see any of them. Does anyone have any concerns or thoughts as to why that might have been the case? It's just about we're trying to get fitness for some of the more less fringe guys like Jesus. So you guys got to fall back? Or is it that, no, genuinely, all these players that are on the field are better than you guys by a lot. See,
I know for a fact we cannot say that because Cedric played minutes today. As much as I do like the like rubbing it in, we're playing Cedric, get fucked. It does suck to not see someone like Smith Rowe or Nelson play because I think that they have, when they have played, I think they've been bright and they don't deserve to not come off the bench. But at the end of the day, we also only have 5 subs. So in a game where you made a sub at halftime and you took Saka off, you know, we're making subs that you wouldn't normally make. You wouldn't make these tactical subs. You wouldn't bring Cedric on. So it's like, you know, keeping the entire squad happy, I guess. I don't know. There's only so much you can do, I guess.
I guess I'll be the villain. Everybody needs to shut the fuck up. I'm sorry. I did not care about Emil not playing. If you want to be a good team, a very high quality, like quality team, a high caliber team, you want to be like the Real Madrid squads, the Manchester City squads, you want to be that. And not everybody's going to play. It just is what it is. Not everybody's going to play. Like the ceiling is very high now. Like the floor is very high. He'll play other games. And if he doesn't,
tough shit.
It is what it is.
Gabby says tough shit, Emil. Train harder. I do think of the, I guess, let me not offer my thoughts. Which of the three of those Hill Enders do you think is most likely to have a career at Arsenal?
Of Reese, Smith-Rowe, and Emil Nketiah? And Eddie. Most likely.
Most likely of the three.
I still think it's Smith-Rowe. I think that the most likely, the inverse direction, most likely to get sold in the summer are Reese and Eddie. And I think Emil is like a hard maybe, and it's getting closer to yes. There's a good chance that all three of them are gone in the summer, which is very, very sad.
Yeah.
Eddie's the first one gone in the summer, let's be real.
I think he has the most value. I
played him for a whole season last season.
Eddie has the most value of those three.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
when we sell them, he will go for the most money because he plays in a premier position, has played serious minutes in the Premier League, unlike them. And like has been successful. So like I do think that we get 40 for Eddie in this one.
If he does his job, if Edu does his job.
Hey, up Crystal Palace.
I've never seen a more West Ham striker in my life. Eddie Nketiah is going to score tons of goals for West Ham. Yeah, he's a Western player. I promise you guys, he's a Western. Don't worry about it. Like Declan Rice left the locker there for him and everything. Don't worry about it. Like Freddie Ljungberg went there. Jack Wilshere went there. You know, there's a pipeline there. The Crystal Palace pipeline is not quite as good. We had Ian Wright go there.
Well, Ian Wright was there before.
Did he not go back after then?
Oh, I don't know if he went back after, but I know he was at Palace before he came to Arsenal.
Yeah, then there's Rob Holding, who hasn't played much, which explains Crystal Palace's form. But, you know, like, that's a different
story. Well, because Chris Richards is better. So
he's not better than Holdini. Nobody's better than Holdini. Fuck. Gosh. The goal difference. It's obviously important, but
we have 45 now?
We have plus 45. City has plus 35, and Liverpool has plus 39. So we are winning on
looking good.
Goal difference. All the underlying stats seem to suggest that Arsenal are the best team in the Premier League at the moment. So I guess we'll kind of exit on this note, but Gabby, is Arsenal the best team in the Premier League?
Yes. On form, like in 2024, absolutely. It's not even close. Yes. What? We'll see when we get to the Etihad, but yeah.
You just said every single underlying stat points to us being the best team or playing like the best team. And, you know, if it walks like a duck, if it talks like a duck, it's probably a duck. I think Arsenal is the best team in the Premier League right now.
But what if that duck doesn't have Phil Foden, who is clearly better than Bukayo Saka?
Oh, Lord.
That's got to be racist, man. I don't know.
It's not that great.
It's not the nonsense.
All right, guys. I think we've done enough on we didn't even get to talk about Sheffield United at all because they were so bad. I can't wait for them to get relegated. There's nothing to talk about. Besides, you know what? Let's not be mean to them. I hope they enjoyed watching the Arsenal though, because we did. In any event, folks, it's been fun. Thanks for hopping on the pod with me as always. We'll do this again after Brentford. And tell the people peace.
Peace.
To my Kivior haters, fuck you.
That is not very peaceful, Gabby.
I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got no way to go. Got to catch my sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar.